The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Valar Morghulis, and welcome to Making the Eight. I'm your host, Jackie Jennings, and the goal of this podcast is trying to get you up to speed on Game of Thrones before season eight. We're trying. It's hard, but we're trying. I'm recapping one season per episode and then talking to a friend, my hand, about their favorite moments. And today, we are on season six. Later, I'm going to be joined by Kara Mahorn, associate editor and fellow Game of Thrones superfan, who's going to be serving as my hand for this episode. But first, we recap. We start, for a change, up at the Wall, where Jon Snow is dead. He's dead. His body is laid out for days for a full two episodes. It's starting to get blue. We can see his wounds. He's done. Ser Davos and his friends are mourning him. They don't really know what to do either because they're allied with the man who was just assassinated. Melisandre is back from Stannis' defeat, and Davos suggests, you know, maybe you could use some of that magic for good, for a change, and bring Jon back to life. Melisandre very reluctantly agrees. She is now really skeptical of her own powers and religion, since Stannis, who she thought was her prince that was promised, was the man that her god was giving her visions about, doesn't have a head anymore. So she is very doubtful of her own abilities, but she does it. She revives Jon Snow, and he is not happy because he got murdered by his own men. He executes everybody who murdered him and announces that he is leaving the Watch. Because his oaths were for life, and guess what? He died. He's done. No more Night's Watch for Jon. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the North, Sansa, who escaped Ramsay at the end of last season and has been escorted north by Lady Brienne, arrives at Castle Black, where she is reunited with Jon. Two Stark kids together hasn't happened in a long time, so it's really nice to see. The pair then get a letter from Ramsay, promising that he won't quit until he steals Sansa back. They know, Sansa particularly, that there will never be peace as long as Ramsay rules the North. So she convinces Jon to raise the Wildling army and march south against Ramsay. He does, and he meets them in an epic battle, which is called the Battle of the Bastards. Before the battle, Sansa insists to Jon two things. One, he's outnumbered. He's not going to win. He agrees, but he doesn't know what to do and insists on fighting. She also tells him, Ramsay's tricky, don't fall for anything he does. Jon listens to Sansa, kind of, but doesn't really give her the credit she deserves for having, you know, lived with Ramsay, lived with Littlefinger. He attacks, even though he knows he's outnumbered, and he attacks in a way where he allows himself to be baited by Ramsay. What's the bait? It's little Rickon Stark. Ramsay has gotten his hands on their littlest brother, executes him in front of them, and baits Jon into attacking in a way that gives Ramsay the upper hand. The battle is going really poorly for Jon. Luckily, before the battle, Sansa had written to good old Peter Baelish, who controls the Knights of the Vale. They ride in at the last minute, at Sansa's request, and win the battle for Jon. So, Sansa and Jon win. Sansa gets to watch Ramsay eaten by his own dogs. Pretty satisfying. The North is theirs, but she might be Littlefinger's. Yikes. That's what happens when you call in a favor. Poor Rickon Stark and Osha are both final victims of Ramsay's cruelty, and the once robust Starks are a little less robust. Way up north, speaking of Starks, I mean, way north, with the three-eyed raven, Bran is learning how to control his visions, see the past, and maybe even alter it a little. He's still being hunted by the White Walkers. He learns that the White Walkers are actually creatures created by the Children of the Forest, who are ancient, not quite human inhabitants of Westeros, who are now his friends, but who once battled men for control of the world, and we know who won that battle. The White Walkers finally come for Bran and Meera, who escape, but not before their faithful friend Hodor sacrifices himself to save them. It should be noted that Hodor's origins are revealed in this season in a manner that displays that not only can Bran see the past, but he can kind of maybe perhaps impact it too. It's way too complicated to explain here, but just know that that possibility is on the table for season 8. The final vision that Bran sees this season is of Jon's birth, and it's in this vision that we finally learn the truth of Jon Snow's parentage, something that fans had long suspected and is finally confirmed. He is not Ned Stark's son, but rather his nephew, because Jon's real parents are actually Rhaegar Targaryen and Ned's sister, Lyanna Stark, who died in childbirth delivering Jon. On her deathbed, Lyanna made Ned promise to look after Jon and keep his real identity a secret, which is a vow Ned kept on to his death. Yep, so Jon Snow seems to be the heir to the Iron Throne. He is the son, the only living son, of Rhaegar Targaryen. Wonder how Daenerys would feel about that. Over in Dorne, Ilaria Sand and the Sand Snakes continue their coup and murder Prince Durann, effectively taking over Dorne. The end of the season sees Ilaria, Varys, and Olenna Tyrell, the matriarch of the Tyrell family, making an alliance in Dorne with Varys, who is an emissary from Dany. But whatever has driven the Tyrells to abandon the Lannisters? Let's find out. In King's Landing, in the capital, the power of the Faith Militant grows. Cersei was humiliated last season by them, and Margaery remains in jail. Cersei mourns for her daughter and now appears even more ruthless than she was before, if that's even possible, and it is. Jaime, Cersei, and the Tyrells agree on one thing, that Margaery has to be freed from prison. It weakens the crown too much to leave her locked up. They hatch a plan to forcibly spring her from jail, but before they can do that, Margaery springs herself by pretending to be totally converted and devoted to the Seven. Her and Tommen forge an alliance with the High Sparrow. Tommen might be sincere. Margaery, however, is giving her greatest performance yet and is walking a fine line between power and being totally subservient to the High Sparrow. She's in a very tricky spot. She senses that things are tenuous and sends her grandmother out of the capital. The clash between the crown and the faith reaches a fever pitch on the day that Cersei is supposed to formally stand trial for her crimes. Her naked walk through the streets was just an atonement. She's still got to stand trial. She doesn't show up. And instead, she blows up the entire Sept of Baelor with wildfire, killing everyone inside, including Margaery, Loras, their father, the High Sparrow, all the Faith Militant. Cersei is now a full war criminal. She's committed this horrible crime against her own people just so she wouldn't have to stand trial and just so she could eliminate her enemies. Poor Tommen, who really was in love with Margaery, sees the destruction of the Sept from his tower and throws himself out. He kills himself. Cersei is crowned queen, but all of her children have died along the way. The only Tyrell left, old Lady Olenna, wants nothing but revenge on Cersei and allies her house with Daenerys to get it. So that is why Olenna, at the end of the season, is on board with Dany. She doesn't really care what happens to her at this point. all she wants is to make Cersei pay for killing her grandchildren and the future of her house. In the Riverlands, once Margaery is out of jail, but before they're all dead, Tommen sends uncle slash father Jaime to help the Freys take River Run. River Run is the seat of power in the Riverlands and is currently held by Catelyn Stark's uncle, Brendan Tully, a.k.a. the Blackfish. Jaime breaks the siege with very little violence and is briefly pit against his old friend Brienne, who, remember, is in service to Sansa. The two friends don't actually have to face each other in battle yet, but they part, realizing they're on opposite sides of a conflict that seems like it's going to lead to violence down the line. The Starks against the Lannisters once more. In the east, Tyrion and friends try to run Meereen in the face of a missing queen and some very pissed off enemies from Yunkai and Astrapor, the other two cities that Dany conquered not so long ago and are now rising up against her. Tyrion strikes a deal with the slavers, despite Missandei and Grey Worm warning him not to trust the slavers. The two of them grew up as slaves under these men. They understand their psychology more than anyone. Tyrion strikes the deal anyway, and of course Missandei and Grey Worm are correct. The day is saved when Dany swoops in on her dragons to torch the enemies attacking Meereen. But where was Dany the whole time all of this was going on? It's a very long story, surprise, but she was captured by Dothraki. Remember the Dothraki? That's Khal Drogo's people, Dany's people, from way back in seasons 1, 2, 3. We haven't seen much of them. But at the end of last season, when she's deposited in the wilderness by Drogon, the Dothraki are the ones who find her. And they believe that as a Khal's widow, she is supposed to stay cooped up with all the other widows until she too dies. That's just how the Dothraki do things. So she's essentially in widow jail when Jorah and Daario finally find her, and using her power of flame resistance, Dany frees herself with an assist from her two guys. After that, she flies back, takes back Meereen, and finally, at the end of the season, decides to set sail for Westeros, leaving Daario in charge of Meereen in her stead. Also in the east, in Braavos, Arya is living blind on the streets, paying for her disobedience to the House of Black and White last season when she blinded and killed Meryn Trant. She's still tormented by the waif, but she's learning to fight back even blind, so this is just making her an even more formidable warrior. She finally gets her sight back when Jaqen believes that Arya truly thinks of herself as no one. She's able to convince Jaqen that she has given up her identity as Arya Stark. She's given another mission, to kill, but she believes her target is a good person and she doesn't go through with the mission. That's the final straw. The waif asks to please kill Arya for this latest failure, because when you promise the many-faced god a death, you have to give him one. He demands payment. Arya didn't kill her target, so the waif says, I've got an idea. Let's kill Arya. Jaqen seems to be a little bummed, which is out of character for the Faceless Men, but he agrees. So the waif tracks Arya, badly wounds her, but in one of the coolest battles of the whole show, Arya uses her brand new skill, fighting in the pitch dark, to kill the waif instead. She delivers the waif's face to Jaqen, saying, you know, here's the life that the many-faced god demands. Jaqen kind of, you know, approves, tips his non-existent cap to Arya, and she leaves for Westeros saying, guess what? I'm Arya Stark, bitch, and I am going home. She's a stone-cold killer. She's got the ability to change faces and fight blind, literally. Arya is heading home to mess up some enemies. At sea, one of our last plot lines is Sam, who hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention in these recaps. But Sam is heading to the Citadel, the place where maesters are trained to learn how to fight the White Walkers. Jon sent him here before Jon was killed so that Sam could eventually learn to help Jon and aid him as Lord Commander. Sam and Gilly, his wildling lady, it's hard to describe what their relationship is. They stop at Sam's house first, where we finally meet his horrible dad, Randall Tarly. He's thinking you know, maybe I'll leave Gilly here. She can live with my family. She'll be safe. But after seeing how horrible his dad is to them both, they head to Old Town together, where the Citadel is. They steal his family's Valyrian steel sword on the way out the door, and they are gone. Also, last season, we didn't mention it, Sam and Gilly had sex. That was a big moment for Sam. I feel bad not shouting it out. They had sex, but only the one time. So again, hard to clearly define what their relationship is. Congrats, Sam. On the Iron Islands, a new character, Euron Greyjoy, comes on the scene, murders his brother Balon, Theon's dad, and tries to take power for himself. Theon is now back home after him and Sansa got away from Ramsay, and he supports his cool-ass sister Yara as queen of the Iron Islands. There's kind of a vote. It's called a queen's moot or a king's moot. Euron wins, and Yara and Theon flee to ally themselves with Dany. Yara and Dany forge an alliance. That's the alliance we see taking shape at the end of the season with Dany, Olenna Tyrell, Yara, and Ilaria Sand. It looks like all the baddest bitches in the world are going to be on the same side against Cersei. So that is where we leave season 6. New alliances are forming. We've got Cersei on the throne, but all her children are dead, so it's not exactly a win for her. Sansa and Jon rule in the north, but can they rule together? Or is Sansa on Team Littlefinger now, aka Team Nobody But Me? Arya is one of the deadliest killers in the world, and she's headed home, while Sam is unraveling the mysteries of the ever-growing White Walker threat. And Bran has information that could flip everything on its head, that Jon Snow is really a Targaryen, and by law, should kind of be ruling them all. And that's it. That's season 6. Just like watching it. If not better, you know? Karam and I are going to chat all about it after this break, so stay right here. And we're back, and we are going to talk all things season 6 right now, and I am joined by my hand for this episode, Kara Mahorn. She's a contributing editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and you might know her as the Blurred Girl. Kara, thanks so much for coming and talking to me.
Thanks for asking me.
This season, I say this before every conversation, the season's crazy.
They're all kind of nuts, though.
They're all insane.
People die.
People die in ways that you didn't know.
In new ways.
In new ways. We were like, what twisted mind? And the answer is George R. Martin's mind. Right. Mostly. I think more than any, season 6 leaves us in a place where it's like, this is going to take us through the end game. Like,
yeah, it's funny. It's at, end game. See,
I know.
What you did there.
It's in the air. It's in the air. Like, yeah, just for context, we're recording this before Avengers Endgame comes out. So it's on all of our minds. But we have like all the different alliances. We have Daenerys and the Tyrells and the Greyjoy, what's left of
the Greyjoys.
The decent Greyjoys, if there is such a thing, are all allied. And we always try and talk about new characters. And speaking of the Greyjoys, Euron Greyjoy.
Yeah, Euron just kind of shows up.
Very much just shows up.
And decides he's going to take out his brother. And I've got questions.
Ask them because I have the same. We were talking about this before.
Because Balon Greyjoy is quite a bit older. Like, he literally could be his grandfather, but he's his brother. And he's like, oh, you're old and feeble and I don't like you and you should go. The funny thing is, I did feel that Balon should have gone sooner because he wasn't helping.
Like, not
He's just stays. And he's like that angry uncle that shows up every Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Still angry about what happened to him in like 1956.
And you have to ask your mom, you're like, how am I related to him again?
Exactly.
Because it's not really uncle. And she's like, no, someone married him and he just keeps coming and no one has the heart to tell him no.
And we keep trying to find out why his girlfriends are getting younger.
Yeah. Like, what's up?
But yeah, it's just, he had to go. He was a nasty dude.
Yeah.
But we replaced him with,
worse.
He's not great. And then on top of everything else, I mean, you knew he was going to come for Theon because Theon's like been through it. His sister has every right to be queen. But clearly, at this time. They've never, they clearly won't accept a queen and they clearly won't accept a lesbian. Like that's like everybody's biggest issues, I guess, with this woman.
Yeah.
That she won't just, you know, sit down, get married and have some kids.
Yeah. That she wants to rule, which she's really good at.
She is, but it's sort of like, and one, she is really good, but what's sad is sort of like in a city full of blind people, the one-eyed man is king.
Right.
Or in this case, the one-eyed woman is queen.
Right. Because she's just that good at it.
No, and they're idiots.
Yeah. I always say, like, I've described in different episodes the Iron Islands as it's just like shit heaps. They're just like these, and they call it that too. They're like, it's rocks or we can't grow anything. We have to be pirates, not even because we necessarily want to, because what else is there to do? There's nothing here.
And I'm also confused. They rule the Iron Islands, but they're waterfaring people.
Yes.
Like shouldn't you be the water islands? I don't know.
It makes no sense. The Iron Islands, when I've talked about the books to anyone who hasn't read them, I'm like, yeah, the Iron Islands, the storylines are better, they're more fleshed out, but the Iron Islands are the same. They suck.
Like, well, so wait, was Euron any better in the book?
So in the books, there's a couple brothers.
Okay.
He is like a composite of a bunch of people, a bunch of brothers, which also I think
who apparently were all bad because he's terrible.
They're all pretty insane.
Okay.
But I think they made this character, it's like they made him one super crazy. Like they merged all these kind of characters who were nutty in different ways and all they kept was the nutty parts.
Yeah.
I think it might also explain the age difference because it is noticeable between Baelon and Euron.
Huge. Because at first I was like, okay, so how is he? I thought it might be like, oh, I'm killing my uncle. You know what I mean? Like that made more sense to me, but I'm like, your brother?
Yes.
It was weird. And then the other thing was, I will fully admit, when I first watched season six, I did not pay that much attention to him because I thought he was just a red shirt. I just thought he was going to die.
Well, it does feel like, how can someone come in this far along and matter?
Right. I thought, oh, he's here to kill off his brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the plot twist. And then he's going to catch it. So I thought in the, you know, when they go through the ritual where they like basically drown you if you survive, which means you just basically have superior lung capacity.
Yeah.
Or have been living in the mountains.
Yeah.
You will wake up from this thing. And I thought he was going to die there. When he didn't, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. Oh, you're around. Okay, great. So we've got that going on. The other new character who we don't sadly get for very long, but is Lady Crane and all of the actors that Arya kind of falls in with. And I think one of my favorite...
When she has no name.
Yes.
The girl with no name, who's currently blind at the beginning.
Yeah, God. Ugh, that whole plot line is so good. Lady Crane and the actors, for me, were kind of this like late in the game piece of world building where we've never seen... Other than drinking and going to brothels, we don't really see what people do for fun in Westeros. I guess they joust, but even that, it's like someone's dying.
Right. So, they either kill people or they're at a brothel. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. But it was cool to see how common people have seen and perceived the show we've been watching. It's like this weird meta moment.
Yeah. It seems like these plays that these people do for... And I thought they were traveling, but it seems like they're not. They're in one place. Yeah. People travel to see them.
Yeah.
That's their Twitter.
Yes.
Like, this is how they're interpreting, like, the world and the news and everything around them.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to see. And it's also, like you said, meta, watching Arya watch them act out the death of her father and her family.
Her family's story, yeah. And Cersei is sympathetic. Like,
and
that's
she's
how
not
people
in
see it.
That's the interesting,
right?
Because no one knows she exists.
Yeah,
she literally is the girl with no name.
Yeah,
because nobody in the play, there's no part for her.
That's right. Sansa's in it.
Yeah, because the general public doesn't know Arya really exists.
Yeah,
she ran away. Yeah,
she's no one.
Yeah, they think she's dead.
Yeah, that's right. Everyone thinks she's dead at this point. So those are like the two I think biggest truly new characters, but we're now in the later stages of the show, which means characters can reemerge. And one of the most, I think, surprising is Edmure Tully. So, and they even in the episode where he reemerges, say, like, remember who got married at the Red Wedding?
Yeah, because
you're like, wait, no, who?
Right, it was weird when they were showing the recaps, and I'm like, they're showing the recap of the Red Wedding.
Yes.
Nobody wants to see this. And I'm like, oh, to remind you that this guy's coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. So we get Edmure back. So he married, I think her name's Rosalind Frey, at the Red Wedding, and he's been a captive ever since.
Yeah, never saw her again.
Yeah, never. Apparently they saw each other once.
Yeah.
They had a wedding night, and yeah, God bless. But yeah, he's back. Jamie's using him as a pawn.
As Jamie does.
Yep, as Jamie does. I guess to avoid killing people, but yeah, I don't know.
I don't think Jamie really cares. The only person Jamie cares about is Cersei.
Oh, God. He loves her so much.
And
so
his children, but that also is tragic.
Yeah, they're gone. I mean, well, no, at this point, little Tommen.
Well, actually, by the end of the season.
Yeah, little Tom's gone. But at this point, he's still around. But yeah, I remember. So I guess you had the same reaction when Edmure comes back. It's kind of like, oh.
Yeah, no, I look like Jaime Hunsu's character in Guardians of the Galaxy. Who?
Yeah.
Like when he said, I'm Star-Lord. Who? I literally had that face. I'm like, and then also because he'd been in the dungeon and everything and styled differently. I'm like, and then the whole conversation he has with the Lannister when he's, you know, tied up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, right. It's coming back.
Yep. I know who you are. And I remember why this matters. And yeah. Okay. Great. So yeah, those are the two who kind of reemerge. And then in this season, I feel like they spent so much money making this because there are so many massive, like no punches pulled, huge sequences. The first, just chronologically, is Cersei blowing up the Sept of Baelor.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excuse me? Like, well, what?
Yeah, when you... what's the princess's name? The girl, her daughter-in-law.
Oh, Marjorie.
Yes.
Yeah,
when Marjorie's mother, I love her, says to her, like, you're out of chess pieces, honey. You got to go. What are you going to do? You should leave like I'm leaving.
Yeah.
You know, there's literally all of your enemies are at your gates. You know, you've lost. It's time for you to go. What are you going to do? Get rid of everyone?
Yeah.
And Cersei goes, come to think of it. Yeah. The Mad King left me an option.
Yeah. that's not the worst idea you've ever had.
And oh my God.
It's so... one of my favorite moments in... there's so many. I mean, there's the whole like score that's happening.
Yeah.
But it's the moment when Marjorie realizes something isn't right. Like she...
She's like, Cersei's not here. And they're like, oh no, we'll get her. She's like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
We need to go.
We should all get... out like
yes.
something like, you know, I have that feeling constantly and it's never right where I'm always like, why is the plane shaking? You know, where you're just like, I think I, but she's right. You have that sense of like, oh my God, no one's listening to her.
Yeah.
No one's listening to her. Listen to her. Oh,
and
oh
my God. I mean, we pretty much knew her brother was going to go because Finn Jones was already cast.
Right.
In another show.
So that's right.
So it was like, we know he going to die.
Yeah.
But we didn't know everybody else.
Everyone.
And then also it was just the little birds. That was the creepy part.
The kids.
That was the creepy part when they rose up and started like, because when that little boy ran, basically he was bait for one of the henchmen to get into the bottom of the...
Oh, the kids.
But he sat there and like, all right, my work here is done. And at the look on his face, I'm like, how are you at like 8 years old or 9 years old? Like, yep, my work here is done. This is where I die. Like, what?
Yep, I'm done.
It was so insane.
It is worth... That is something I didn't talk about. So all through the show, Varys has always referred to his spies as his little birds. And you... different points see, like, there's one scene where Littlefinger is kind of pointing out like, oh, she's mine and she's mine, referring to people who spy for him. But I think this is the first season where you realize like, oh, kids. He's been using kids as
his informants.
He's been
using orphan children.
Because
you know when all these people die and get killed, they leave children.
Yeah. And they need money and nobody's
food.
Help. Yeah. And they're willing to do any, and no one suspects them. A kid can run in. Ooh, it's
creepy.
Scary. Yeah.
And they can fit in the walls and listen and hear things. They can go places adults can't go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the creepiest thing on top of like, oh my God, she's going to blow up this whole building and hundreds of people or thousands are going to die.
Yeah. It's also, this is psychotic to say, but it did make me feel, because there's almost something about how insane Cersei is you have to respect, because she realizes what Olenna's saying is right. Like, you're out of moves. You're done. You don't have any more allies. And her mind is like, I'm thinking big. You know, yeah, like, oh, I don't okay. need you.
But no one's expecting me to blow up the board.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me I'm in no position to win this game. I just thought of, and then even her reaction after that, when Tommen, as we've kind of already talked about, Tommen was like, okay, my mother's controlling me. My wife is dead.
Yeah.
I've given over the city originally to these horrible people. I'm just going to die now. And it's like,
I know. Poor Tommen.
But her reaction is much different than when they bring her daughter back to her.
Yes. Well, I feel like at that, Tommen's death, she almost was resigned. Because she believes.
To the prophecy?
Yeah. Like, she believes in that prophecy. One kid dies, the second kid dies. I think probably some part of her is just counting the days. It's just wondering, like, how, you know? I don't know. That's pretty bleak.
It is.
But
Cersei.
Cersei's pretty bleak at this point. They cut her hair and she's like, I'm fucking done.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm done. But she's boss level moves at this point.
Oh my God. Crazy boss level moves. But yeah. So that's like the first, that kind of kicks off how insane the season is. Then we jump to one at the end. There's one in the middle.
Yeah.
But the huge, huge battle of the bastards. This is one that we've known is brewing for a while. Ramsay Bolton versus Jon Snow.
And resurrected Jon Snow.
The newly alive again Jon Snow.
Also with a haircut.
Also with a haircut, yeah.
Because apparently that's part of the ritual. When you level up to boss or when you come back to life, you must get a trim.
You get a cut. Yeah, you're feeling good. You got that tax refund. You get a cut. I don't know why. But yeah, so they finally meet. Like, Ramsay, I think at this point in the show, he's taken the crown from Joffrey, and he is the most despicable, irredeemable, awful character. And they do such an amazing job of, you think Jon's going to lose. Like, the way that it's...
Because especially also with poor Sansa. All Sansa and Arya have been doing is like, listen to me. Hey, listen to me. And Sansa was like, you're not paying attention. I know who he is.
Yeah.
You guys are looking at battle plans, looking at all these rules. He doesn't play by the rules.
Yeah.
And when she turns to him and says, our brother is dead.
Yeah, he's gone.
Right. He's like, no, we're going to rescue him. She's like, I need you to understand right now that he is dead. I am a woman. You are a bastard. Literally the only heir to the throne he has. He is dead.
Yeah. He's not going to let him live.
And it was like she saw it and Jon couldn't. And then you see him like it was just I'm like at the moment I saw him, like, he's going to use him for target practice.
It made me sick when I realized.
But actually, when you saw Ramsay show up on the battlefield with the rope, didn't you think he was just going to be pulling a body behind him?
Yeah, I thought he was going to be already dead.
Yeah, I was very surprised that he was still living.
Yeah, and it's exactly, so yeah, this is a moment I didn't touch on too much in the recap, I guess I kind of did, but the night before the battle, Sansa basically says, you don't have enough people, and also Ramsay is going to do something. I don't know what it is, but he is a master of psychological war. He's going to do something to get inside your head, to trick you, like, be on your guard for more than just maneuvers on the field. And Jon takes the bait. He listens, but I think he doesn't really try and process what she's saying, because it's not in terms of like, put this like legion here and put your cavalry here. He's like, yeah, what are you talking? It's like that, God, not Saw, but it is like, because it's not this concrete thing, he's like, yeah, I don't even know.
Also, there's just a way that women are regarded in this world.
Yeah.
They just won't, apparently, unless they're a witch, they won't listen to them.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very disturbing. And it's funny when she goes to see, when she's talking to Littlefinger and she's basically, you realize later that conversation was longer and she was getting the troops and stuff like that. And when she stands there, because at one point I really thought Jon was going to not die in battle, but die by being trampled to death.
Yeah. Oh, when God, that's so crazy.
That pincer move when they came in from both sides.
I'm like claustrophobia just thinking about it. Yeah.
So it was really, really, that was one of the most intense battles.
Yeah.
Because Game of Thrones, you never know who's living.
You don't. Yeah. And people die in ways that feel anticlimactic. They just die. Like Stannis just, he's in the woods and he dies. I mean, it's cool because Brienne kills him, but Tywin dies on the toilet. Like, there aren't these huge, you know, like not everything is Ned being dragged up and put down, and it's this whole dream. People just like,
well, he had the most dramatic one. Like, yeah, and like Balon, what, gets thrown off a bridge?
Yeah. But I think it's worth, I'm trying to wrap my head around, I think what's so cool about the Jon and Sansa thing is that he's not like, ugh, shut up, you're a girl. It's that he doesn't know how to listen to what she's saying.
Right, because like, he's emotional, period. Yeah,
yeah. It's not that he's necessarily writing her off. It's that he's not really taking the time to think about, like, what is she saying? Like, oh, psychological games. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, because when he's in the, when you see it go down and you see his brother die in front of him and you see him look up and get all emotional, it's like, she told you, you don't listen. You know nothing, Jon Snow.
You know nothing. Oh my God, you know nothing, Jon Snow. The last kind of like big, cool moment happens sort of those two moments I think kind of bookend, if I'm remembering, but it's Daenerys. She's been caught by the Dothraki. They make her go to widow jail where she has to live with all the other Khal's widows.
Widow jail.
That's what it is. It's like widow jail. Like, sorry, you outlived your man. And now
you basically wait there. We won't touch you. Your award for outliving your man is us not raping you.
Yeah. That's all you get. Oh. And her solution is burn them all down.
But the funny thing is, her solution and Cersei's solution are the same, but for completely different reasons.
Yeah. They're both sort of prisoners. They're both out of moves. And so they decide, I'm going to burn this down. I'm going to literally light you
because
on fire.
Because I'm fireproof. I forgot.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And you didn't know. And guess what? You're not. Yeah. So Dany, in kind of like a second birth by fire, just torches all of the Khals, and if you kill a Khal, you get all of his followers. So she kills like 20 Khals all at once. She gets all the Dothraki.
Yeah, right. Now she has a Dothraki army.
Oh, so cool. Also, a little scary.
It is, because now she's going home.
Yep. Now she's going home with a big army. Yeah, those are three massive moments, massive scenes. And it is sort of all three characters going for broke. Mm-hmm. Cersei has no options left. Dany has to burn it all down to get out. And Jon almost loses his entire wildling army at the Battle of the Bastards.
Arya also almost loses everything too, but her battle is more.
Talk about Arya. Arya's
her battle though is within.
Yeah.
So she has she's got this whole ninja Jedi-esque journey she's got to do and like battle people blind and, you know, girl with no name and. Basically, she's being trained to be an assassin.
Yeah.
But as we will see in future episodes, it comes in handy.
Oh, it comes in so handy. It's so cool. I wish we had time to talk about every single moment.
This season was big, though, with the big, epic, not just deaths, but like plot turning events.
Yeah. Everything is aligning. Everything, the alliances are forming. Everyone is pulling out every trick in their sleeve in the book, every ace in their sleeve, every ball in the hole. I don't know. I have no idea. Whatever. They're all going for it. They're all going big. Okay, Karima, thank you so much for talking about all of this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Because it is Game of Thrones,
I gotta die.
You gotta die. You have to, but you can pick your death and we'll make a very cool audio moment for it.
This will go down in history. Yay.
Yep.
Honestly, I've said it before. If I had to go out in any way that I've seen in season 6, I would say I would want to be, I would want to get blown up in the Sept.
Yeah.
I just want to go quick.
I think that's
the move.
I don't want
to suffer. I don't want to get burned by a dragon. Burning alive is no fun.
No. It's so. 1, 2, 3 wildfire. I'm out.
Yeah.
Not like Matt Romano, who wanted a rat to eat through his chest.
Matt has issues.
Matt has issues.
He does. We're gonna get him some help.
All right. So we'll arrange that. You're in the Sept of Baelor, and boy, oh boy, it's on wildfire. I've got to go feed my direwolves. They're very hungry. So that's a wrap on season 6. Only one more to go. Wow, praise the mother. You can download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. So do that.